Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this live episode of Vox Vomitus. I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of the Kindle Award-winning novel Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, as well as Pretty Ugly and the recently released The Japanese Box and Other Stories. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, Allison Martine, author of The Bourbon Books, which includes Dibs Since September, Move On Melinda, and Climb the Salmon Ladder. As you can see, if you are watching us live, we have quite a full house today. So I'm going to do very brief introductions to Heather Doherty and Joshua Fox. They are the editor and the publisher for House of Haunts, which is the reason why we are all here today. Thank you, Heather and Josh, for being here. I'm going to have everybody else do their own introductions as well, but let's start with Heather. Tell our viewers a little bit about yourself and House of Haunts.
Oh, about me? Okay.
You just sounded like such a Southern belle there.
Me?
Not stars.
No.
Heaven, look besties.
Oh, there he is. Okay. Sorry.
One more just popped in. It's fine. Just keep going.
You're good. He's in England, so we're going to forgive him. He was off on the time just a little bit. That's okay. Okay, so I'm Heather. This book was many months in my head in the making before it became a real thing. I started out in the book world as a reviewer. I then became an author. I then became an editor. This is my first foray into curating an anthology and publishing it, which luckily Josh was here to help me with that because he knows much more about that end of things than I do. But yeah, what else do you need to know about me? Books, and more books.
That's great. Books, more books. Josh?
I'm Joshua Lloyd Fox. I'm Heather's husband. I'm the owner of Water Tower Hill Publishing, which took on the production of this book. I also did all the formatting and everything of it. I also wrote a story, I think, in it. And before Heather inoculated me into the horror community, I made that. I'm the writer of the best-selling Archangel Mission series. I'm best known for my nonfiction, I Won't Be Shaken, A Story of Overcoming the Odds. I'm a good old boy from West Texas. There you go.
Now, I don't know if we should go down or up, especially because Dave just showed up and probably doesn't know what's going on. So, Gage, we're going to have you go next, and then we'll go to William, and then Dave, and then he'll know what's happening by just copying.
Just copy everybody.
Go, Dave. It's good.
I'm Gage Greenwood. I am not a good old boy from Texas. I'm a New Englander.
Yes! are you in Rhode Island?
I am in Rhode Island, yes.
Okay. I'm in New Hampshire.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. My son is trying to talk us into moving to Maine, so we'll see if that happens. Then I will be completing my mission of becoming Stephen King.
There you go.
I'm the author of Bunker Dogs and the Winter's Myth Saga, and I also am the author of the story that takes place in the bathroom in the House of Haunts.
The Tub Guy. That's not the name of it. Spiraling Upward, but I'm just going to call you the Tub Guy just so I remember who's who. William.
Heather gave me options. And I chose the bathroom.
There you go. I'm William J. Donahue, Bill Donahue. I am originally from Philadelphia. So right now I live about an hour and a half north of the city. I am the author of the recently released novel, Only Monsters Remain, Burn Beautiful Soul, as well as probably one of the longest titled novels ever, Crawl on Your Belly All the Days of Your Life. And I was lucky enough to write the Bleeding Garden story in this beautiful book.
Was that 12 words? I lost count. I don't count.
Exactly. 12, 13, something like that.
So now, Allison, you can't
make fun of him instead of you, because Jennifer has the longest titles and I try to tag her and stuff. I'm like, I don't even have room for all this stuff. I'm going to start putting acronyms in. You know, the dead one. The other dead one.
They're all about dead.
More people are dead. All right. Dave, you have to unmute first before you talk to us, Dave, because I can see that. There you go.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes!
Right. Okay. Well, I'm so sorry for being late, because obviously I'm a limey So I'm over here in the UK, and Central Time, Pacific Time.
It means nothing to you, does it?
I have no idea. So it's that's why I have not time to do me hair. I have not time to do me background. So sorry for jumping in late there.
You forgot to wear dark burgundy lipstick so we can see your mouth too.
Has it worn off?
Yes, it's probably
it must
stuck
have been all. It must have been all that kissing I've been doing. Yeah, no, I'm from Liverpool in the UK, and I've got a nomination for one of the longest title books as well. I've wrote Mutant Superhero Zombie Killing Disco Cheerleaders from Outer Space with Uzis. I think that's only 11, or was it?
That's 12? 11.
Okay, 11. But outer space is two words. That's my other question. It's like
that's outer, what I've done. Outer space is two words.
Yeah. Okay. Just checking. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Guys, length and size doesn't mean everything.
But it's, immediately it's the show goes gap into the gutter. Well,
so we're all right.
Okay. Do I want one for shortest? Because does anybody have one that's shorter than one word that's only four letters?
I've got a three-letter book called Ulf.
Oh, you win.
He wins.
The longest and the shortest.
The longest and the shortest. It depends on whether it's cold or warm.
Wow.
So I also wrote The Boyfriend and Zola as well. So, and I'm responsible for the music room story in House of Haunts.
Very nice.
And I realized I didn't say that I was responsible for the attic in House of Haunts. And my
mannequin special guest.
This is Inez. She is the possibly haunted, not necessarily sex mannequin that is at the heart of the attic story.
I love the fact that you always have to say she's not a sex mannequin. Do people just assume that she
they
is
do.
All the time?
They do. Mm-hmm. And when I did inherit this from a friend of mine who passed away, and when he told me about her, I was like, is it a sex mannequin? And he's like,
did
no.
He answer that?
Yeah, he said no. He said she was
long pause there.
A companion exactly. Was her pause? Mannequin.
That's not what the Amazon ad said, but how he used it. We
she
don't
actually
know.
Looks like every ex-girlfriend I've ever had.
Is that a good or a bad thing?
No arms, no hair.
So she's obviously over there in America, isn't she?
Yeah.
Does she have her legs right now, or is she just the top half?
It's just the top half. No arms. The legs are upstairs. I try to keep her body parts separated throughout the house because I do have this lingering fear that she's going to put herself back together.
So she's like Voltron.
That's fair.
Yeah, keeping the legs around is probably just asking for trouble. Gage, did we ask whether or not the doll behind you is a sex doll? Because I think that's
it.
Is it? Okay,
a dead girl on a sex swing.
Gage, you missed your opportunity to go, what doll are you talking about?
Yeah, apologies to everyone who's listening and has no idea what's going on or why there are so many voices. It's a lot easier when you can see the six squares. There are two in one square. Well, there are two and three squares if we're counting the dolls. Joshua, do you count as Heather's doll? Maybe. Okay, we'll get back to that.
We're still in our honeymoon. Like, literally, we're still honeymooning.
Okay, then I'm going to go with yes. Yes, you are.
I liked the pause in between answering there. It was like,
I wondered
either way.
I wondered who's been talking, who knows what. You know?
I know nothing. Very, very
it's that OnlyFans account that you guys keep teasing.
Well, and one of the things, so there are so many people on here because there are 24 stories for 24 rooms on this multi-story house with ghosts in each one. And some of you guys aren't even inside. I mean, William's out in the garden growing things. We've got mausoleums and all this stuff. Heather, can you tell us a little bit about where the concept came from and then how you went about distributing who was going to do what and contribute all this chaos into one form?
I can. So I got the idea last year, I don't know, probably about a year ago at this point, that I wanted to do an anthology. I thought I've done reviewing, writing, editing. The next thing I want to do is put together an anthology. So I kind of played around with it for a while. And when I decided to just bite the bullet and do it, I thought, what should it be about? What should the theme be? And I grew up reading old school Victorian Gothic haunted house ghost stories. Like that is still my favorite kind of horror to this day. And I thought, we'll go with that direction, but how can I make it a little bit different than all the other haunted house anthologies that are out there? And it just came to me like, duh, put every ghost in the same house. We're going to have the most freaking haunted house in the country, at least, if not the world. We're going to shove them all in there together.
Yeah, the most ghosts for your money.
Yes. Yes. So originally we were going to do 12 rooms, 12 ghosts, 12 stories. But it kind of blew up. I asked several people up front, you know, will you write for this? And I had like 10 of the 12 spots filled. And I thought, okay, for the last couple, I'm just going to open it up and say, does anybody want to be in this? And I had like 60 people message me back and say, hey, I'd like to be in it. And I was like, oh crap.
What did I do?
I hate having to tell people no, you know? So I thought, well, maybe we'll add a few more rooms. And I actually put a message out on Facebook. I said, what's some like weird, unusual rooms we can put in this house? Cause I've already got the basics. I need more. So I have space for more people to write. So we ended up, we were at 12, then we were at like 16, and then it was 20, and then it was 24, and then it ended up going back to 23. We finalized at 23. And you know, when you do it like this, you can't just put out a submission call and say, hey, everybody write a story about a room, because I don't want to end up with 12 kitchens, you know, and no bathroom. So I had
that to, would be a disaster for a house.
Right. Especially if you make Mexican food in all 12 kitchens. But anyway, so I had to ask people specifically, and I had a list of rooms and the authors. I had to go one at a time and say, which room would you like to write for? And there were times when I would have to wait like 2 days for one author to answer me, so I would know what room to take off the list before I went to the next one. So that took a lot longer than it
should. It's like children choosing toothbrush colors. Come on, guys, just pick one. But you don't want them swapping each other's.
Some of the rooms that I thought people would snatch up so fast, like I thought the library would go super fast. And it was one of the very last rooms that got picked, which is crazy to me, because I'm thinking the library in a big haunted mansion should be first choice. But people picked what they picked for whatever their reasons were.
I felt like I won the lottery by getting the attic. Yeah. I was like, what, attic isn't taken yet?
Some of the ones that I thought would get taken fast were the last ones to go. It's crazy. But then, so we had the group, everybody picked their room. We made a Facebook group so we could kind of compare notes and stuff. And I was like, here's the basic history of Hale House. Here's what the house looks like. I made these, they're very sad looking now, little floor plans that I just sketched out on graph paper.
Not to scale.
Josh made them look much, much better in the book. But I did that.
They are beautiful.
Everybody had to pick a year that their story took place, so that we didn't have, you know, somebody's got something going on in the parlor while something else is going on in the master bedroom and they clash. So everybody had to have like a little time frame that was theirs. So everybody had a room, everybody had a time frame, which kept us separate. But then my job, once all the stories came in, was to read through them all and try to figure out where we could have them mix a little bit and say, you know, there's like Marie Lanza's story up on the widow's walk. There's this weird scratching in the chimney. So the chimneys obviously go all the way down through the house. So I asked Samantha Underhill, who wrote the library story. I was like, hey, can you have some weird scratching in the chimney at some point in your story? You know, just stuff like that, so that we could, little bits of stories ended up in other stories. And the authors did it just among themselves, even without me. They'd say, hey, I'm writing, you know, in this room, is there stuff going on in the room around me? What can we incorporate? And that, I think, is what makes this anthology so cool, is how the stories sort of play together. I mean, every author got to write their own story in their own way, but then they also went together, which is just so cool. Cause when you read through the whole thing and you notice the little parts where it refers back to other things, it's just the coolest thing.
Well, and Heather, yours does that, because yours is like the end cap story. And so when you read through it, you get these Easter eggs to all the other stories, not all the other stories. You don't have all 24 in there, I don't think, but referencing back. And I will say that is something that's special about this collection, where you have disparate authors. So it's not like one author where you sometimes say, oh yes, this author is referencing his other works. Like when you read Mallarmine stuff and things are set in, say, you know, Goblin or, you know, Chowder, because I mean, who names a place Chowder? And you get those references. But the fact that you had different authors doing that together was really something special that I haven't seen in other anthologies, where they have a theme, but each story kind of just is off on its own. How did you, like, so did you get a chronology there to do that? Because I know we've got stories going back, is the earliest what, 1823? Is there something before 1823 or is 1823 where it starts?
1823 is the beginning because I wanted it to be exactly 200 years till now.
Yeah. 200 years of terror.
Talking to the chronological like years, because it does, it jumps around everywhere, but it works so well because it's like this group of authors is so communicative, so open, so willing to make this thing work by her vision. It's become, I hate to say it, but like a family. It's like,
well, that's why we're doing like Brady Bunch almost thing right everybody.
but it just worked. Cause I remember like I wanted to do a Civil War story and somebody had a story that was already written that was close to that. And I was happy to change mine to kind of fit with theirs. But then we had to reach out to some other people like, hey, there's like a shooting in the ballroom in 1860, whatever. Can you kind of add that into your thing? And so that really connected the whole together.
Yeah. And it's funny because so when I was reading it, I was reading it just in the order it is. So if people are looking at the table of contents, it's the order of the house, not in chronological order. So it's almost like someone could go back and reread it, being reading them in order to be able to see the thing, like the progression of the timeline. So Heather, you were saying that people got to pick which room they had. Gage, why did you pick the bathroom?
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you exactly why I did too. Because I am not a gross out horror type of guy. That's not the style of horror that I write. So I thought to do a haunting in a bathroom without that element,
still not getting gross.
It was going to be a real challenge. So I just like to challenge myself. So
can you tell us a little bit about your bath tub story? It's like you called it Spiraling Upward, alternate title, Hyenas at Bathtub. Just didn't have the ring.
Yeah. So hyena in the bathtub.
The hyena in bathtub. Yeah. Lion King scarred me as a child. Go on.
So when Heather approached me with the idea, I was just like floored by how cool of a concept this was. And I really wanted to write a story where the person who was coming into the house was already pretty haunted. and then once she's in there, the house knows it. And that's really what I wanted it to be, where the haunting coming from the house, what made it terrifying for this character was that it knew her and it pulled on all of her past traumas and the things that already haunted her coming into the house and just brought that to its peak.
I loved it. I mean, I have to say my story is similar in a way. I had, you know, my main character's mother has passed away and she comes into this house with a creepy mannequin, and the house, the same thing. It understood her trauma and knew how to mess with her.
Well, and I will say something that was interesting about both of yours is that neither of them are Hales. Neither of them are married to Hales. Neither of them become Hales or inherit. They are both there for other reasons, rentals.
And they're both like artists. Like, just like these misfits who get to like live in a mansion and it goes horribly wrong.
Yeah. And if anybody's going, why are you talking about Hales? It's because it's Josiah Hale is the original back in 1823. It's the Hale House. So I don't know what it is about Hell House, Hill House, Hale House. Don't live in one. If you find a house called, if it has a name and it starts with an H, probably Sir Claire.
I will say, going back to Gage's bathroom story, my favorite thing. So Heather set it up as like a tour guide. She's the tour guide. Mm-hmm. She's actually a character from the history of the house, but she's giving you a tour through every floor, every room. And what I love that we put a bathroom in there and Gage wrote that great story is you don't get a break. You don't like get to go to the bathroom. Just say, oh my gosh. Nope. There's no breaks. There's no breaks all the way through the house. You don't get a break from the ghost.
You don't even get to go outside, which takes us to William, because you're in the garden, which seems like it's a beautiful, respite place, but not so much. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yours? It's called The Bleeding Garden, and you don't have a tomato here to show us. So we also would have accepted blood orange, or what is that thing, the really horrible fruit that smells like the corpse flower? We would have taken that also.
All my tomatoes are dead on the vine at the moment, so forgive me.
I'm sorry.
I love the idea of the concept. So when you're in a haunted house, basically once you get outside the house, you're free, you're safe. I love the idea of the fact you go out to the garden, you're in this place, you're out of the house, you're free, but you're not. You're still in this. You could still be in this terrible place. So that really appealed to me. I think the idea of being, I love the outdoors. I love hiking, mountaineering, all that kind of stuff. But I think like being outside is both very comforting, but also very terrifying because who knows what can happen. And that's kind of what happens in the story. It's set in the 1950s, pre-Civil Rights Act, and it really centers on a black woman who marries into the Hale family because she grew up seeing that the challenges that her single mother went through, her mother's best advice would be to find a good man. And it doesn't necessarily turn out to be good advice. Actually, turns out to be terrible advice.
I mean, she tried.
She did try. She sure did. Or maybe it doesn't turn out to be terrible advice. Who knows?
It's a horror anthology.
The most haunted house in the world.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I like the idea. It could be a haunting. It could be a demonic presence. But what Daphne, the main character, what she finds in the garden, kind of speaks to her, and it's kind of whispering in her ear, maybe telling her bad things and showing her things that may not be real. Like a lot of things in the Hell House, things aren't exactly what they seem.
And did you have a horrible, mean housekeeper who was awful to you growing up? Is that your source of trauma that you wanted to share with the world?
I didn't.
But I hated her. Sorry.
Oh, no worries. I did know someone named Nora who was rather unpleasant. So maybe that was helpful.
Nora, if you're watching, this is what you get. You end up in an anthology.
Never be mean to a future writer.
No.
Nora, we're happy to offer you a discount on purchasing the book.
Yeah.
Nora is the
your
deceased,
contributions
so I think all right.
to William's
oh. oh, okay. Nora's ghost, we offer you a discount.
All right. So this is a fitting eulogy, maybe. And then Dave, okay, you're listed as DE, but so we're going to call you Dave just because that's easier. Do you have some musical trauma to share? Because you picked the music room. Tell us about your story and how you decided to go for that.
Well, first off, I didn't get the same memo as everybody else. And Heather will attest to this because Heather asked me to do it. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. And then I just went full on into it. But my story was based in England. I didn't know that it was all going to be in the book.
Your room.
Yeah, and Heather was like, she was like, why is this person, what's a PM? And I was like, a member of parliament. And she's like, no, it's not. So I had to go and change it all.
You had to de-anglicize the whole thing.
It was like not only a time warp, it was like a displacement.
You know, happens in haunted houses. You just end up in really weird places, secret passages to other continents.
Other continents.
And islands.
England's full of haunted houses, isn't it? You know what I mean? So it's like, it's what we do. We haunt stuff. We definitely do. So I've always loved music. I'm a massive, massive music fan. And I just like the idea of the spooky music channeling through the house at like odd times and the tick, 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 tick of a metronome. And so I just thought, like, what's the first piece of music you get to learn when if you're playing piano? And it's usually Prelude in C major. It's like one of the earliest more complex pieces of music that a beginner will learn.
So is those chopsticks, Farrelly's, and then Prelude and C?
And then you go into something like Prelude and C, because it's quite an easy, it's two-handed, but it's quite an easy chords to play, and it sounds fantastic when you do it. So
well,
I just
have to sing a little bit when you're done, Dave. So I'm just wondering, warm up.
I haven't been drinking. Hold on.
For shame.
That means you don't do a speech.
Then you won't be able to turn me off. You'll be like, I'm mute, Dave.
Yeah, that's fine. I can put you back on mute. It's fine.
I just love that. So I just thought that the idea of spooky music going right the way through the house, a horrible music teacher who knows his stuff but is a nasty bloke, and then you've got like a teenager. But a teenager back in the early 1900s being not so different than teenagers these days, and just
they
like
never
do
change.
Don't want to do anything.
Dave, I got to tell you, man, when I was formatting your story, well, for one, all the English words, punctuations, and everything was a little bit much. But your music teacher made me walk away from my computer, like dead serious, like. I was like, I'm going to throw this computer out the window. And what was worse is I was like frustrated because of the formatting was different because you're from the UK. Yeah. You're not as bad as the French Canadians, but oh, it was still.
Oh, no, they're the worst. Yeah.
Wait. But, hey.
They drive on the wrong side of the page or something?
No, yes. We drive on the right side of the road, which
the
is
metric side.
Oh, it's all in metric.
It's all this metric.
But seriously, your instructor, your music instructor, I had to walk away from the computer before this whole thing just got kaputted because of your guy. there he is. He's watching. You, JF, you're who I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, pardon my French or pardon the Frenchman. So it's fine. I don't even know. Yeah. And honestly...
Cheers for that, Josh. That's good to hear because I wanted to make him just as horrible a person as you could.
Yeah, I'm trying not to cuss, but even thinking back, that guy was rough.
I did have flashbacks.
Don't tell me that I can swear because you'll never get any normal words.
Were all piano teachers terrible? See, I only ever had loving choir teachers that taught me how to sing and to stand up. And here I am like this most of the time. If they see me, they'd be like, Allison, posture. I'm like, my diaphragm, I'm fine. But. Yeah. I mean, I was traumatized by a band director, but I was much older then. So, you know, teenagers were all terrible, even in the 1900s, which is
like 1900s. Yeah. So there you go. So I didn't want anybody to survive in my story. So if anyone's not ready, then
nobody lives.
That was a massive spoiler. So there you go.
I know. It's like,
don't need to read it. No.
Spoiler. Yeah.
Heather, did you do a body count at the end? Not cumulative, but who has the highest body count per store? Because I feel like Josh probably has a pretty high one, which is a great segue into Josh. What happens in yours and why does everybody die? Or just about?
So you guys have to understand, I came in halfway through this project. We got married halfway through this project. And so... she was having a lot of concerns about how she was going to get the logistical part of this book finished. She was wanting to hire it out, who to hire to do the formatting and stuff like that. She had these drawn plans on a piece of graph paper, and being the great new husband that I am, and I've done this for myself for quite a while now, but not in the horror community. I'm not a horror community guy, although I think y'all have like literally the closest best people now that I'm.
Oh, horror. Into it. I'm not horror either. I just follow where Jennifer takes me. And now
which
I'm
is like in the horror world.
I know. And now I'm like, now I'm horror adjacent. And it's all your fault, Jennifer.
So I felt like, so I actually took the place of one of the authors that wasn't able to finish. I don't know
did
if it was
die?
A family emergency.
It was family health.
Did they die?
But did they die?
No.
What's your story?
No.
So they weren't able to finish the ballroom. So I just told her I would go ahead and write it. But being a non-horror guy, I love historical fiction. She was like, if you want to write one during this period, I was like, Civil War, done. This is in the South. So I actually know what happened in the Civil War around New Orleans. It was pretty, pretty brutal. So I was like, well, let's have a Mardi Gras party at this place and let's have the Union Army do a encircling ambush and pincher everybody and murder them. So
am I the only one who pictures pincer moves like this?
No, I do too. Every time he says it, I do.
This is what we do. We're like pincer.
Also, I'm prior military. So
Gage.
We all doing the pincher move.
We're all doing
the pincer
move.
Gage,
do it. All
right. There you go.
So knowing military. Knowing military tactics and the actual names of military maneuvers from back then, I wrote it as a historically, but everybody dies. There's a lot of blood. Also, too, like I'm an emotional human writer. I like to write the emotions of people. So I wanted everybody to really like these two young women who were looking towards the future. One was going to get married to the heir of the Hell House. One was going to get married to this older stag guy and the excitement of that. But I had to do that in 4,000 to 6,000 words. So I didn't get to really expound on my characters like I normally do. And then I just killed them all at the end.
And then they all died.
And they all died.
I read the beginning.
Heartbreaking. Cause I was like, they're having the best time.
And I was like, okay, which of these girls is going to die? And he was like,
yes.
Every time I read his books as he's writing them, he kills my favorite characters every time.
That's what we're supposed to do though.
So, does he know they're your favorites before he starts murdering them? Or is it just he happens to kill the one that is just the most endearing and you're like, thanks a lot, dude.
He That's a good question. Do you know they're my favorite before you
murder? He wants to hold you while you cry.
I'm going to give a secret to the world about riders that nobody knows, but I'm going to spill it today. We kill our favorite characters.
That's true. Yeah. No, that is. You get the messages from people reading, like, you killed so-and-so. I'm like, you're welcome.
And
they're like,
yeah, and especially in the fantasy sci-fi world, like my mission series, they all come back into the other plane and stuff. So it's not really, they all come back around. But what I love is, I love when people write me and say, I can't believe you just did that. You made me fall in love with this person. Mm-hmm. I have an emotional commitment and then you killed them. And deep inside, I'm like, yes. Because as writers, we really want to invoke that kind of a thing in readers. We really do. I don't want to entertain anybody. I want to evoke emotion.
It's not my goal.
I've said that so many times, Josh. I'm like, I'm not here to write something that's going to make you feel good.
Like, I'm not going to amuse you.
It's not supposed to be fun for you. It's supposed to be traumatizing.
When my daughter was really young, I wrote Ulf for her, which was a Father Christmas story. And I told her, like, no, nobody dies in this one. But now she's older, I've rewrote it, and now Rudolph's gone. Everybody likes. Get out, Rudolph.
It's terrible. And see, I write sci-fi and fantasy, and my characters that are dead stay dead, so they don't even get to come back by way of other planes or haunting. I mean, no, they're just gone. So,
well, I just released the newest cover for the newest book. You know, it's all out there. But my wife came to me, yesterday?
Look on her face.
And she was like, tell me now. I swear to God, tell me, who do you kill in this one?
Who's
like, who?
Die in this
and
one?
I actually told her, I was like, nobody actually dies in this one. This one's a good one.
I didn't believe him.
I would, honestly.
You're like, fool me once, man.
No one dies. And you know who also doesn't die? The mannequin doesn't die in your story, Jen. That's not really a spoiler. So can you tell us a little bit about your special guest, Miss Inez?
Oh, yes, Miss Inez.
Jennifer Ann Gordon, author of... Well, is the story just called
Inez? It's just called Inez.
Okay, I'm like, did I forget the title? And I just keep calling it
Inez. It's just called Inez. Originally, I was thinking I was going to have it Inez in Pieces. And then I'm just like, I'm just going to call it Inez. I did inherit her. So that is a true thing that happens in my story, which is about a young couple who are kind of reeling from the death of my main character, Gwen's mom. And they decide... because there's a life insurance policy, they get some money and they want to live in a haunted house. And the story takes place during the pandemic, during the lockdown, 2019, 2020. And I really just wanted it to be like these two people who have no business living in a mansion, living there and having the house get to know them and get to manipulate them. So... parts of it are based on my real life. I did move into a haunted house during the pandemic, but I still live there, and it's nicely haunted. It's not Hale House haunted.
As Inez turns her head to look at
me. I know.
Well, and Jennifer, when I read it, I was just like, Jennifer, none of this is fiction. Other than the fact that your mother is not dead, most of that is not actually fiction. And I'm going,
I know, the attic.
Attic. True. You changed some names.
I changed some names.
But not really, because last I checked, one of the names you use sometimes is Genevieve, which is not that far from Gwen. So I'm just like, you're not even trying hard to change.
I didn't try. I even left. So in my house, when we moved in, when we looked in the attic, the person who was showing us the house said, do not touch those blankets that are in the corner.
Like, wow.
And I was like, I was not planning on it. And now I never even go in our attic. Like,
is the concern like asbestos or something that maybe there's some kind of chemical on it? Just best leave it.
No. She just said they've been there as long as she's known about it. And nobody ever puts anything in the attic. So it's just like this large empty room with these creepy blankets folded nicely in the corner.
And you are an artist, and yes, you do some painting. So I was reading through all this going, yep, that sounds like, yeah, that's all CU. Mm-hmm. But Roman doesn't stay out of any rooms in your house, because your place is not mansion size. It's large, but I mean, we've had this discussion, for those who know, like, we're recording from our homes. And so if something happens, we have to record at a different time. Jennifer has to figure out where she can be, because it's mostly open. So like voices carrying, you can't have the dog like jumping up. Although William's cat has made an appearance appearance already, but the cat.
I'm so sorry.
No, the cat's fine. I was like happy.
I saw a shadow and I was just like, oh my gosh, there's a ghost.
You're getting haunted during
the podcast. Well, you were going to say, I don't have a cat.
You don't have a cat.
What cat?
Here. No, but Tubby, your dog is a lot louder than a cat. So it voices, the barks, carry. When the UPS guy shows up, he freaks out.
I know. I'm in the middle of my living room today because I tried to get Inez into my bedroom.
Don't.
And it was I put her down there and I'm like, you know, that's she was in the bed and I'm like, can I record upstairs?
No, are her legs again? Because they're not there.
They're not attached to her. So they are underneath my upstairs stairway.
As they should be, sure.
Yeah, underneath the stairs that go to the tower.
Do you not think it'd be worse seeing him crawling along, using that crawling?
Oh, well, luckily her arms are attached.
Yeah, she has to shoulder her way.
I have to backtrack for a second. How do you move into a new house and have someone tell you don't touch that, and then you don't actually, like, I would have to touch it because she said
that. Gage, you know, I was saying bold to that realtor to try to use that as a selling tactic.
I feel like if the blankets were closer to the actual attic door, I would have done it, but I would have to go the length of the house to get to them, and I just am scared.
I feel like you need to touch the blankets.
Imagine how disappointed you'd be if all there was underneath it was just dirty old magazines.
I know, it's like it's
all
just
torn.
There's some socks you'll stub your toe on and some bad magazines.
Oh, well, my oldest daughter, you can throw a sock at her and injure herself. So I mean, sometimes you better watch out for those socks, especially for dirty.
All the guys laughed. All the girls were like, "What?
No, I got it.
I got it.
You know.
What was that Atticus for?
Got it. But I just didn't want to verbalize. Like, okay, Josh, I guess you went there.
Hang a lampshade on it. You have a lampshade behind you, Jennifer.
I do. And I also
have been drinking, Dave. So
you have.
Okay. No. And so Heather, you're
so jealous because it's early in the morning there, isn't it? Or is it?
Well, it depends. For me, it's morning. I think for most everybody else, it's past noon, so it's totally fine to be drinking. I mean,
it's 20 to 80, isn't it? My bedtime. An old man, though.
It is your bedtime. No, yeah. Heather wraps up the story, and like I said, so yours is set in the mausoleum, but yours is kind of the beginning and the end. And can you tell us a little bit about where you came up with the ideas for who this person is and why this house is the way it is?
Well, the whole thing started when I came up with the name. I was like, what are we going to call this house? And I am such a huge fan of Shirley Jackson. Like, somebody compared my writing to hers one time and I about fainted. I was like, that is the highest compliment you could ever give me.
Haunting, I have a Shirley Jackson tattoo on my arm.
Like, I don't know how many times I've read The Haunting of Hill House in the last, 30 something years. And so I liked Hale House because it sounds like Hill House. It sounds like Hell House. It's also a good book. And I thought, okay, we're going to get as close to those as we can without actually copying them, because I know that anybody who loves horror is going to go, oh, that sounds like Hill House, or that sounds like Hill House, or whatever. So I got the name in my head. I got sort of a picture in my head of what this house looked like in my mind, and I drew out my floor plans. And then, of course, I just needed an old-fashioned guy's name, and I don't know where Josiah came from. It just sounded good.
The Bible.
And I knew my story was going to be at the end. I actually didn't write my story until
the day before the book came out.
No,
she's I waited
until everything else was done, because I knew I wanted to be able to. It's the first story chronologically, but the last story as you're reading, and I knew I wanted to incorporate bits of a whole lot of the other stories, not all of them, but a lot. And so I couldn't write mine until I knew what everybody else's stories were, so that I could draw in these little parts. So I literally wrote mine. My story was the absolute last thing that got written for this book, other than the foreword.
I was going to say, I feel like Mallarmine got in under the last.
And thank you to him for doing that.
Thank you, Josh.
Because we got it to him so late. Mm-hmm. But that's another story.
I had to professionally ask him to hurry the hell up.
You didn't have to be professional about it. You could have just been like,
please,
do it, dude.
I did. I was like, hey, how's that going? You gonna, how's your reading? You know, like, have you read it? But anyway, my story, I knew I needed to pull in everybody else's bits. And I didn't know how my story was going to go. And I didn't, even as I was writing, like the little tour guide parts in between is really where the idea for my story at the end came in as I was writing this. And I got to the last part and I thought, oh, I know who this tour guide is. I know how I'm going to like pull this in and incorporate this and make this wrap up the whole story, which I mean, obviously I don't want to say too much for people who haven't
read it. Say it.
But I knew it all started when Josiah Hale built that house and that he was going to see in his lifetime and be sort of tormented by the things that were going to come in the future. But then I thought that. It's really cool to put that at the end so that as people are reading the things he's seeing that happen in the future, they've already read them. And I just thought it was the perfect way to wrap everything up.
And also just a point of clarification, the Daphne in William's book is not the Daphne that Josh writes about. Totally different Daphnes. There's no like giant serial killer, like hard rock makeup going on. That would be out of place in the 50s. That would just be kind of strange.
But just before its time.
Well, and so you mentioned Hill House and Shirley Jackson. So I don't even have to really ask Jennifer that when Mike Flanagan directs all of your stories, which of his recurring characters are going to be? Because obviously you're going to be Victoria Pedretti, because I assume that it's Victoria Pedretti.
Victoria Pedretti. Yeah.
This sure. One?
She's,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And weirdly, Victoria Pedretti, I love her so much. She's kind of my, in my book, Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, she was my ghost. She was like, she's just like the person I want.
We're in love with her.
I want to be her.
If anybody else wants to fan cast their stories by way of Mike Flanagan's recurring crew, go ahead right now. We're welcoming any of those. And I'm sure Mike Flanagan is listening and taking notes.
Yeah, if Mike Flanagan wants a copy of the book, we're happy to send it.
Yeah.
I would just like to point out that Josh had never watched any of those Mike Flanagan shows. And, you know,
what?
House of Usher just came out.
Listen, all of you horror people.
I was like, we're so judgy.
Usher comes out. We got to watch this. And he was like, what is this? And I was like, you know, it's Mike Flanagan's newest one. And he's like,
what's a Flanagan?
What does that mean?
Then I had to explain to him. And I was like, it's horror, but it's the horror that I really like. This dark, creepy,
slow,
atmospheric, emotional, psychological. Like, it's the kind of
stuff. I did get some street cred because I lived in Southern Maryland for the past, I don't know, 14 years. I've actually been to all the Poe stuff in Baltimore.
There you go.
All the festivals, all the book, the street booksellers, you know, with the Poe name. I've been to the library. So I've actually stood in some of those places that Poe wrote about, so I get a little bit of cred with my wife.
But did you train a raven to come in and just say nevermore? Because that would be like the end cap to that Poe experience.
I'm more original than that. I have a kitty cat around here that says F
say
you
stuff?
All the time.
Yeah.
Cursing kitten.
They all say that.
Wow. My guest on
they do.
My guest on To the Moon Allison yesterday, it was Essa Hansen who wrote the Graven trilogy. So all the sci-fi nerds are like, what? And she's a falconer, and I learned that falcon can smell like vanilla. So it's like, now I know that birds have smells that are sometimes pleasant, and I'm just going, what?
That's where you get vanilla from. No sense.
That's where you get the vanilla from. You just
I
you
know.
Get you grind them falcons. You grind them up. You grind them and grind them
up. I know a weird bird smell fact. Baby owls, just the babies, smell like maple syrup.
And they taste do. Like chicken.
Well, don't eat them, but okay, we also know baby owls are where all the alien rumors come from because the baby owls look like the gray-eyed guys and they have these really long legs and they're strange looking, but so cute.
They're so cute. I got to feed a baby owl. Rumors.
That's where aliens come from. Guys. Very nice.
When Josh was just saying then that he stood in all the Edgar Allan Poe parts, my claim to fame is when I went to America last, I found the steps that Laurel and Hardy pushed the piano up
and down. Wow. Up
and down. And I have got photographs of me on them steps.
Did someone push you?
Is like, wow. That's it. That's my bucket list complete.
That isn't should be your author crazy? Photo.
Isn't it crazy how steps
great
are...
idea. Yeah.
Isn't it crazy that certain steps are like important? Because in DC is the
exorcist steps.
But it's next to a gas station now. You have to go across the Key Bridge over in Georgetown, but they're there and you're like, wait a minute, those look familiar. You're like, I'm going to get a Slurpee and then I'm going to go take a picture on these steps.
Well, the Laurel and Hardy steps are almost exactly the same, except on the left-hand side, there's another house being built whereas it's grass in the Hurl Url and Hardy film. But on the right hand side, it's exactly the same. It's just bizarre. I was just like,
oh, you should post that photo in the House of Haunts.
I will do. Yeah.
People will be like, what does this have to do with anything? And we're like, we really don't know. And we never know.
I want to ask a question that I know the answer to, but I'm not sure if Heather and Josh are talking about this publicly yet. Will there be a second anthology?
I don't know how much information we should give.
I don't know if.
I'll give some information.
It's completely done. No,
I'll give some information that even some people on here don't know yet.
In the sequel, the Hale House moves to the UK, so Dave will feel
so Dave will be fine. The rest of us have to learn the metric system now.
It's all step based. It's all based around steps.
Seriously, Jennifer, you know you can't math.
I can't math. I'm like, I'll never learn the metric system.
Hey, she's about to show you something that's going to quiet all of you.
I'm going to tell you something first. Okay, so yes, there will be a sequel. There will not only be a sequel, there will be a series. 5, maybe 6 Haunts books. The second one we are just sort of starting to begin. We got the cover.
What does he have?
We got the cover today. I don't know how well you can really see that.
I can see that there's a building, but you have to tell me what it says because the hospital? Is it say Hospital of Haunts? Jennifer
Hospital of Haunts.
She can't see any of that. So hospital.
But I knew what it was. So I can pretend I can see it.
Ah, shoot. Maybe I should turn the brightness back down.
Okay, so if it's a series, is each one a giant building that's haunted? Because I can name a bunch of different buildings that terrify me.
Oh, you should see what Samantha Underhill went like in the group. She wrote 60 different things.
I really want to do abandoned shopping mall of Haunts.
So this one's going to be Hospital of Haunts, 23 wards, 23 ghosts, 23 stories. Yes. We have pretty much everybody agreed to come back on and write a story. We have a list of people. I think Gage wants the bathroom.
That's his new thing. It's bathroom. Until they're just stumps.
And because Water Tower Hill Publishing is not just 100% this kind of stuff, but I got to tell you, the love for this idea, Heather's just brilliance in it, the family kind of that's been created. This has been the most fun I've had with any book that Water Tower Hill's done. And I just can't wait to get to this next one. In fact, we're trying to put this so much into the family. My brother has asked, because he was a battlefield medic in the Marines. Well, he was a corpsman, but he was an HMF corpsman. He is asked to write a story in the emergency room. He has seen some stuff. So he'll be writing in a story in this as well.
Nice. I love the gift shop.
The gift shop is a great idea.
The gift shop has already been claimed.
Oh.
I love that when we mentioned this in the group, everybody was just like, I want this, I want that. I know. I was like duking it out with somebody.
You mentioned it first and I was like, whoa, these people are going to go crazy with this idea. Let's finish
the basically chummed the water and we went nuts.
Well, I had to wait till she was in the shower to write the post. But so because it's one of 21 books that Water Tower Hill's doing next year. So we've set the schedule, 24 months out. It's going to be released October 1st. It's going to look exactly the same except that hospital. Okay,
can you see? I don't know how well you can see it.
We can see it.
Okay. I told the cover designer, I said it needs to be that horrible old hospital wall seafoam green color.
Yeah, I always call that madness.
Schools and everything
green.
Used to be. Mm-hmm. So that's what it is.
We'll send the cover into the group, and then we don't want to release all this. No writer tells all their secrets up front, but it's gonna be fantastic. I'm looking forward to it.
Should I tell them the name of the hospital?
Yes,
because I really love the name of the hospital.
Tell us the name of the hospital.
Okay, the name of the hospital is
Hale Hospital.
No, Lychurst Hospital. Lychurst. Whoa. Because nice. Lich and Hurst, two old English words. Lich means corpse. Hurst means hill. So we're literally writing Corpse Hill Hospital. Oh, cool. But with love a prettier it. Word. So
it sounds nice. Hospital.
And this, it's going to take the same format, even the division. So in House of Haunts, we did it per floor and then per room, or then when you went outside. So the divisions, will also be there, but we're using the triage colors in the medical community, green, yellow, red, and black. And then we're going to, we don't know exactly how it's going to, I don't think we were going to do the same like tour guide thing, but we'll figure it out, or she'll figure it out. But everything should look the same. I've already started looking into the architectural drawings. They used to do hospitals in like crosses for a reason and stuff. So it's pretty cool.
We're looking now they're just giant mazes. Like you can never find your way out. Even when you follow the stuff on the ground where it says, this should take you out. And you're like, how did I end up in pediatric oncology? I'm just trying to leave.
Well, I will say, going back to the maps, Josh Mallerman put in his forward that most horror anthologies and stuff don't have like, I mean, in fantasy and sci-fi, we have the maps in every single book, right? You flip back to, you flip back to see where in Middle Earth you're walking now. But to have that in a horror anthology, I'm assuming is a good thing. So we're really excited about doing that.
And Amanda says, a new med student, a new med student starting to learn rounds, maybe is the one getting the tour, I guess.
We did think about,
we've already discussed this.
We talked about the old crotchety nurse who got the duty of showing the new med student.
Is her name Nora too?
Her name's Nora.
Maybe it will be. Who knows?
Of course, Nora.
We'll do a sixth sense thing because, you know, that trope's not overdone.
Nope. We're good.
Well, I'm very excited about Hospital Ponce. And I will, Allison, the story I have in mind is not autobiographical.
Just checking.
It is disgusting. But
I can't wait to write mine. It's going to be so much fun.
Does she buy us a few sides?
I just want every room of the hospital to have a hooded bath.
They should. I mean, that was in the trend at some point.
We spent a whole morning looking at those bathtubs, Gage.
We did. I was like, look at this still weird get bathtub. One of these?
What most people don't know, we're transitioning in our own life. Like we're in an extended stay suite right now because we're going to buy a home. We just don't know where. And her first grandbaby is being born in December. Mm-hmm. So we're in Tulsa for that. But after that, we're not sure. I just moved back from New England. I was up in New Hampshire for 2 years. So I love the East Coast. I love New Hampshire. I don't know if I can take an Oklahoma girl out of Oklahoma. I think there's a law, but we'll see.
It's like the shopping cart lot or her wheels stop when you try to take her over the line.
But I said that because we're also been talking about building our own house. And we spent all morning looking at those bathtubs, Gage. And even if they're still available, like can you buy those? Because they're so uniquely... It was crazy. Crazy.
I love those things.
Dave probably has one. He's gonna.
Thanks for giving me a new hobby, man.
Of design.
Bathtub design.
And with that, we are at almost an hour. So that is when they start kicking us off and saying, go off and write more horror and haunt more houses and get your dolls off their swings, because I'm a little concerned.
Allison, who do we have next week?
So next week we have David R. Slayton coming back, and he is transitioning. I mean, I feel like it's still the right month for David because he's technically more of like urban fantasy with horror. He's the author of Deadbeat Druid and Trailer Park Trickster and
White Trash Warlock.
White Trash Warlock. I'm doing them backwards order. I should have started with White Trash Warlock. Deadbeat Druid is the third in the Adam Binder trilogy, but he's coming back with Dark Moon, Shallow Sea, which is more fantasy, I think. But I mean, I still have devoted October to him. So when he comes back next week, we have a new book, new series, and I can't wait.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you, everybody, our House of Haunts family, our ghosts that are haunted. Vox Vomitus.
Thank you to Inez.
Thank you to Inez, who just really did a great job not coming to life.
Yes, we appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, Gage, what's your
I kept seeing her move.
Oh, does she we never even asked.
It's just Soulless Woman on a Swing is the name. That's what we said on the box. That's what we
said. Yeah, in the business, they call that a Jennifer.
A Jennifer?
Yeah. Just a soulless woman on a swing. Everybody has life goals. That was one.
I'm going to call her Sylvia for now because that seems better than Soulless Woman on a Swing. It seems nicer.
All right, everyone. Thank you all so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for watching this.
It's been a blast. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.